Welcome to what I know is going to be a great episode of Innovation Odyssey. I have with me today Kenny Estes, who is the chief geek at 42 Geeks. And he's got a whole lot of other stuff too under his belt. But welcome.
Thank you. It is great to be here. Long time listener, first time caller.
How are you?
I'm good. Running around, we're doing this, I'm sure we'll talk about it. We're doing this trip in about 3 weeks. So we're in that hardcore crunch time to get the final procrastinators over the line and finalize the itinerary and all that stuff.
Okay. So I give my guest like a 30-second pitch. Who are you? What do you do?
So my name is Kenny Estes. I am the chief geek at 42 Geeks. My job is awesome. So what I get to do is I go around the world and I try to meet the most successful / ambitious / interesting tech folk. So these are VCs, serial entrepreneurs, family offices, just people that play in the tech ecosystem. And then I try to convince them to go on trips together to different countries around the world and pay for me to go with them, which is great. But when we're actually physically in the countries, what we do is we spend the days meeting with the local geeks. So the equivalent VCs, unicorn founders, early stage startups. And the idea is for the tech ecosystems we visit that we are going to learn about what they're up to in a real way by actually talking to the operators who are making a difference in the ecosystem. Now, that's one way to describe it. The more fun way to describe it is we take all of these geeks. Usually we get 30 to 40 on a tour. I don't know, one or two of them are kind of like serial entrepreneur, billionaire type folk. And then, two or three first time founders and everything in between. And they're all, like I said, very ambitious and big thinkers. So we cobble them together, push them outside of their comfort zone by doing travel, putting them in confined spaces together, whether it's buses or airport lounges or conference rooms. And then we shake a little bit and make really cool shit. So that's what we do. We get them all together and just let the magic happen. The phrase engineering serendipity has been mentioned once or twice, and I kind of like that. So now we're using it. So that's what we do. That's the core of it. And then as we go, the geeks, both with the local partners and with the other geeks on the trip, they do business together. There's investments, there's LP allocations, there's company formations. All of them just kind of happen organically. Because the reality is, when you travel with someone for a week, especially in situations like this where we're going to countries I have never been and I'm trying to help plan, things go wrong. You get to see how people deal with adversity and like you just get to know each other so well. So by the end of it, it has a very strong tribal family feel to it and a lot of trust is built up.
Are there marriages that happen too? Because I'm a hopeless romantic.
There are absolutely romances that have happened. Okay. One of them almost turned into a marriage.
Oh, no.
It did not go through in the end. Okay. But yes, it is a thing that has been known to transpire, but not as frequently as you might think. There's kind of an element of, kind of professionalism around it. I say professionalism, but you can probably tell from the tone of my voice. Not super professional. It's more fun, enjoy ourselves, and then also do some business along the way.
I'm going to assume that this just didn't pop out of the blue, right? There must be a reason why you started this particular format.
I did not start it. Okay. I am now a chief geek as a repayment for sins in a former life, because my background, which I'm guessing we'll talk about, is not tour operator. So here I am doing this.
So, my God, Kenny.
yes, I don't really know what I'm doing, but it seems to be going okay. This was originally called Geeks on a Plane. So it was rebooted as 42 Geeks about 3-4 years ago. And the founder of it was early PayPal employee. And then he went to Founders Fund. He started doing these Geeks trips. And then he used the ecosystem he built doing the Geeks on a Plane trips to launch 500 startups. So he's also the founder of 500 startups.
Okay.
So because of that, the geeks are deep Silicon Valley roots. About a third of them are in the Valley. A lot of former early PayPal employees. So it's kind of a derivative of the PayPal mafia. Me being a Midwest boy, I don't know. One of the founders was an investor in some stuff that I've done. He talked me into going on a trip. I have gone on every trip since. I did the math. I've gone to 19 different countries in the last 3 years with them.
Your favorite?
Oh, my favorite. Oh. You can't ask me which of my babies is my favorite. Okay, that doesn't work.
Okay, but I can ask you. You need not answer.
You can ask me, but I'm not going to answer. Now, I will say the one that was most surprising was Rwanda. Because Rwanda, you talk about Rwanda, the thing that everybody knows about is the genocide back in the 80s, which was just absolutely horrendous. Since then, Kagame was the person who effectively put that down, and he is still in power today. And he has recreated a sense of ownership in the community to try to get past the horrors of that. There was a lot of forgiveness in that process. I mean, he's still, you don't put down a genocide by being a teddy bear, right? But and now it is immaculately clean. Everybody dresses so nicely. Like, even if you get out of the city, it's not like there's no crime, there's no corruption. It's just a very stable government in the middle of East Africa, which is not known for being stable. And he's doing a lot of stuff on the tech innovation side that I think is going to have real dividends long term. I had the privilege of talking to the person that he hired to go live in Singapore and study what they did to become Singapore and the tech center that it is in Southeast Asia, and then adapt it for Rwanda. So they are very much trying to become the Singapore of East Africa.
I've noticed that the Silicon Valley has its bubble, just like Switzerland has its bubble.
Sure.
Right. And so do you think their outlooks change when they travel and meet people?
I think they do. But don't forget, there is a selection bias there.
Yeah.
The people that are going to Rwanda to go learn about the tech ecosystem are not the people that make all of the founders come visit their office on Sand Hill Road. Right. So I personally, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, I think the further you get from Silicon Valley, the more investment opportunity there is.
Okay. And you think that'll hold true even despite the AI boom we're seeing?
AI is interesting. So I see at a macro level, we are at a real inflection point, right? The first one is we're in a post-COVID world. I mean, let's not forget COVID ended, sort of ended 3-ish years ago, right? So we are still trying to rationalize the changes in workforce dynamics. But one of those is definitely physical proximity is not as important as it once was. And a lot of people went home or whatever the case may be. So you're seeing a diaspora or kind of this scattering of tech talent to countries where it normally wasn't before. And they're a Zoom call away from investors in America or wherever the money's coming from. So that's number one. Number two is AI, right? This 100x software development improvement using AI, agentic AI tooling, is a real thing. And you don't have to be in the Bay Area to use an AI agent to code something up and find product market fit and really scale it up. The third thing is Trump, unfortunately, right? Where there's a lot of uncertainty in the U.S. business environment. Tariffs are going in. It's causing quite a lot of disruption. And especially with how we're handling the Russia-Ukraine situation, and I'm trying not to cast aspersions either way here, but there's certainly a trend towards isolationism in the U.S. economy. Now, for the last, basically since World War II, the U.S. has been the de facto police force of Europe, right? We want a stable economy there so that we can, buy and sell stuff and capitalism, yay, right? But if that stops happening, and you're already starting to see it where the EU is budgeting a lot more for military spending and kind of like taking more ownership of that side of the house, well, that autonomy also will drive more entrepreneurship. near term, for sure, in Defense Tech, right? That's actually in our upcoming trip. That is by far the biggest theme because we're going to Finland and Estonia, which both border Russia, I'm pretty sure. Maybe they're close to Russia. Either way. And so Defense Tech investment is, we're going to see a big rise of that in the EU, and then that spills over into all other types. And in fact, fun little fact about Silicon Valley is the only reason Silicon Valley is Silicon Valley is because of defense tech spending. If you look at the history of it, the government had like a lot of R&D there, and then the next generation of those, you know, technical innovations in the defense sector, the next generation, their kids, basically became what became Silicon Valley.
Okay. Listening to you, and I know you a little bit, you have a very diverse background.
So you're saying that I can't pay attention very well? I'll take that on board. Yeah. Okay.
No. I would not sugarcoat that. I would just say directly. You've just like, you know, you've done trading, you've run funds, and you are currently the founder and CEO of Diffuse Inc. And so what's the genesis of all of this? Where's your background?
So I started in, like you said, high frequency trading. I got super lucky in that, you know, I joined a 15 person startup. I mean, I was one guy, he was kind of a dick, but he called me the piss boy because what that meant was we were all electronic trading from day one. And this was circa 2002, I think. So this was, high frequency trading was not a term. So we were all electronic. We were one of the first ones out there. And so my job was when the models were running and trading, if somebody had to go take a piss, they would call me over and I would just sit there and make sure they don't blow up. So that was how I started when I was 18. So I joined a 15-person startup when I was 18. 10 years later, I left just before we completed a merger. I guess technically we were acquiring someone to become a 1,500-person public company. So it was a really interesting experience. I got damn lucky. There was a lot of skill in there. But that did steep me in this trader mentality. I like to glibly say, once a trader, always a trader. Mm-hmm. So the remainder of my career has been seeing short-term, typically, opportunities, mm-hmm. and then finding ways to capitalize on them. And mm-hmm. typically, with my background, that's actually funds. So as an example, on the side, and this is how I got started, after the 2008 crash, I'd already owned some rental real estate. And all of a sudden, a bunch of high-frequency traders made a bunch of money in the crash. So that became the first funds. I did a bunch of single-family residential real estate funds with, I don't know, a lot of houses in them. I don't remember the exact number. The market recovered, and then it got harder to find good deals once the prices weren't super deflated. So I stopped growing it and eventually shut down. I sold the assets and returned the money to the investors because I'm also kind of lazy. So once it became like hard work to find deals and it just wasn't like, oh, well, this is shooting fish in the barrel. I'm like, meh, it's a lot less interesting for me. I think at one point we were bidding on like a $1 million apartment building, like 10 units or something. And we were bidding it against a $1 billion insurance company. I'm like, this is stupid. I'm not doing this. So then I moved into fintech venture mm-hmm. capital. Mm-hmm. Again, this was early in fintech because I'm like, yeah, I saw this literally happen in high frequency trading in capital markets. But all of the rest of financial services are still dinosaurs. So there's quite a lot of opportunity there. So we invested in B2B fintech across the US and Europe, seed stage, lead, take board seats, all that stuff. But then fintech valuations went crazy, which was great for the fund or is great for the fund, but less so for my super lazy investment strategy because now it's harder to find good deals. So we didn't do fund two. And then moved into crypto. This was circa 2021, 2022, when DeFi was going crazy and the whole world was going crypto bananas. And I launched a few hedge funds, actually three funds in 3 months, which probably wasn't the best choice. Two of them were DeFi when the yields were really high. We wound those down when the yields came down and the treasury yields went up. And then one of them was an index fund. We got publicly listed in the States. So I think between all of that, I've kind of, I don't know, launch maybe 11, 12 funds, depending on how we define these things. So but they're all, if you'll notice, they're all opportunistic. Like, here's a thing that's happening right now, and a fund is a pretty good way to solve that problem, and the investors make a little bit of money, and then move on kind of to the next thing. It's actually how I got the 42 Geeks gig, because of the macro or geopolitical trends I just outlined a little while ago. There's a lot of opportunity outside of Silicon Valley. So we're doing all these trips. And I'm like, why the hell are we not doing regionally focused VC funds? Like, clearly there's a bunch of opportunity here. Let's do a bunch of, like, a family of regionally focused VC funds and help, you know, transpose those portfolio companies into the Valley and take advantage of the Valley financing. It's kind of a valuation arbitrage. Why wouldn't we do that? So I think I went on 3 trips and they kept bugging them about it. And eventually they just got tired of me asking and they said, fuck it, why don't you go do it? So now I'm the chief geek. So now I'm a tour operator.
You know, I like insurance. Have you forayed into insurance?
I've tried. I wanted to go in there. I popped down to the Caymans one winter because I'm from Chicago originally. Mm-hmm. So it's cold in the winter. So we went down to the Caymans for a month or so. My wife got her scuba instructor license. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get in the water once as far as scuba dive goes, because what I was doing was in the States, you go to a shopping mall or you go to a strip mall. There's like 2 or 3 coffee shops in the strip mall, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to a strip mall in the Caymans, there's 2 or 3 captive managers or reinsurance companies. So I literally just would walk in and just start asking questions about what the hell they were up to. And captive insurance is one of those things that is absolutely fascinating. Tons of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I really, 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 really want to start a captive carrier. It just hasn't been the right time yet. I actually got reasonably close with the real estate because we had nearly enough premium to justify the cost of spinning it up. Tried to club some buddies together to get a little more scale, and it just didn't really go anywhere. So one day I'm going to start a captive carrier because it's a fun game to play.
Okay, so hold on to that thought.
Yep.
We keep in touch.
Okay. Yes. To be continued.
To be continued. And so you said something that you like to look at short-term opportunities because for the other ones, either you get lazy or you just don't lose interest. But there must be some things that you like that are long-term that maybe in your lifetime you won't see. Do you have interest in those?
I mean, except for flying cars.
Okay. That's not that far away, actually.
Maybe. I mean, it's a fair point. I think robotics, the people that I know in deep in robotics are convinced that 2026 is going to be to robotics what 2022 was for AI.
Okay.
It's going to be an absolute lockstep? No. Leap step? No. What's the word I'm looking for here? Yeah, whatever. Big move.
Lockstep and jump? Is that what you're
doing? Yeah, like, sure. Whatever that is. It's going to be a big move. Okay. It go good. And so I'm excited about that. Outside of that, I mean, I've been this whole regional fund thing. I even ran this down probably 8-9 years ago because I've consistently thought that this is a real opportunity. So it's exciting to see that the world's kind of catching up to it and realizing that, oh, there are people that are good engineers and can actually run startups that don't live in America. So that's one trend. But otherwise, otherwise, my angel investing portfolio. I have a compulsive issue with investing in startups. I'm trying to cut back, and that I just can't not do it. But mostly that is people driven around specific opportunities. So yeah, I don't know. And also from my trading background, everything's a trade, and you also lose a lot of money typically when you try to predict what's going to happen. So I'm much more prone to react than try to, you know, glob on to the whatever trend du jour. Well, I do some of that too, but yeah.
Longevity is not of interest to you?
It is. And the thesis that I like around longevity is the first generation of entrepreneurs, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, whatever, right? Made a lot of money. They're getting old, right? So they're going to start caring a lot more about longevity. It's actually why EdTech, in my opinion, took off about 10 years ago, because that same generation of people were having kids. So now it's like, hey, we're going to solve this problem for our kids. And now it's longevity because they're kind of coming up on old age. So I think there's something there. I don't know what that is. I mean, we've got the Brian Johnsons. Well, he's got some other issues going on right now. But, investing a lot of money and trying to prolong life. One positive thing, just because of the interest in it, is the entrepreneur role models of our generation are a ton healthier. If you go look at pictures of Rockefeller versus Jeff Bezos, it is night and day difference. So I think that that's generally going to push things in the right.
So you've seen a lot of people in all your gigs and all the different companies you've started. What are the three qualities that define someone who'll be successful? Successful is not just money, so many other things.
By far, the biggest factor that is going to determine whether someone is successful or not is luck.
Okay, you just break my heart.
I mean, it is. Because you can have, because like I read Pattern Breakers, whatever, last week, and in there they talk a lot about you need to find, you know, technologies that are at inflection points that are going to allow for, and then they have all these examples like Twitch, and was Justin TV, which was the worst business model on the planet. And then it turned into Twitch and was very, very successful. And I know the founders of Twitch. So, I mean, I'm not trying to throw stones at them, but they got lucky. They were in the right place at the right time. They had an interest that aligned with what was going on. So for the big standout successes, it is unfortunately a fair amount of luck and just pursuing your own interests. And if those interests align with something that takes off, great. I think very, very few of the entrepreneurs, except for maybe Jeff Bezos, who is quite deliberate about it, that you just have to be in the right place at the right time. Now, that's not a very useful or interesting answer for anybody, but it is probably the truth. Second up, and I'm just being super honest, and then I'll give you a real answer to your question, is where you were born. Right. If you were born to a wealthy family in America, you basically can try to be. I'm obviously restricting my answer to entrepreneurs here, but you can basically try as many times as you want to start a company. And if you have enough shots on goal, eventually one of them will hit and you'll be a successful entrepreneur. Right. If you are born in sub-Saharan Africa to a poor family, you get to try zero times. That's just the reality. Well, that's not true. We work with a company called Sand Technologies, which is trying to change that. And they're doing some really cool stuff. You should check them out, by the way. So beyond that, sure. I would say just a hunger for learning. Right? People who read a lot, people who put themselves into new experiences to try to figure out what's going on. One good way to do that is maybe go on one of the 42 Geeks trips, by the way. It's a gentle plug for you. But the people that just are geared that way and are lifelong learners, they are the ones that I think are going to long-term be successful. And a related concept to that, once upon a time, I went to business school. I'm not entirely sure why. I don't really use it. But I did go to it. And one of the classes was about basically networking. And they talked a lot about innovation and how innovation really works. And if you want to maximize your likelihood of becoming incredibly wealthy, I can't remember the actual specific terms, but my background is originally high frequency trading. And a lot of the people in high frequency trading are still in high frequency trading. And they're doing a very, very good job. And I'm sure they're making a lot of money. Now, they go very deep on one particular problem. In this case is how do you, programmatically profit in the market? I was going to say take advantage, but that's a little harsh. If you talk to, let's pick 50 high frequency traders, right? If you talk to them about a problem, any problem, and you ask for their opinion, you are going to get very consistently the exact same response. Because they think about the problems the same way. They approach the problems the same way. So it's going to be, pick two or three and maybe you get a little variety, but it's not going to be anything groundbreaking. If you go into music composers, right? They go deep on that one particular problem if you talk to it, whatever the case may be. So that is great when you need to solve a very deep technical problem, which they absolutely do. But the innovation happens when you take ideas and concepts from that deep learning and apply them in different places. That's what we call innovation. So by being the person who has those, I think the term they use is weak ties to a lot of these deep core competencies, and you only need to have two or three, then you can start connecting dots and you can make really cool stuff.
Okay. You've not just jumped roles, you've jumped continents.
Oh yeah, I'm in the UK. Yeah.
And how long?
So I would say in total, I have been in the UK for 6 years at this point. My kids were born in Margate, if anybody knows Kent in the UK. But I moved back here in June.
Why did you move out of America?
If you want me to say because of Trump, unfortunately, that is not the answer. that would be a popular one. It is a story best told over beers, but the short answer is family.
Okay. All right. I move for love, so I know what that is like. And do you think that you would have been, you would have done your stuff differently if you lived in the States alone?
Huh. No, definitely not. Because the reason I went to London was I, apparently we're going to tell piss stories. That's funny. So they were spinning up a London office, and I was 23 at the time, something like that. No ties, no nothing, right? And so I was based in Chicago, and the founder of the firm, like I was walking back from the bathroom, and he was on the way to the bathroom. And in passing, he's like, oh, do you want to go move to London and help set up the office? I'm like, yeah, sure. And that was it. And we just went. So from there, my life has taken a lot of different twists and turns. But again, to my point about luck, I guess, maybe, and new experiences driving a lot of kind of likelihood of success, or at least doing interesting stuff. I'd probably put myself more in the category of the latter. Yeah, I think that if I had stayed in Chicago, stayed in high frequency trading, there's a very high probability I would be one of those people that were very deep in HFT and less so somebody who kind of travels around and tries to collect entrepreneurs from all walks of life.
I have a trademark question on my show, which is, are you an entrepreneur or an innovator? Definition is up to yours. You can tell me you don't like the question. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, I don't really know what those terms mean. If we take the definition of innovation, which I've already presented earlier, then I definitely would fall under that category where I spend all day, every day trying to just connect dots between different verticals. I do have entrepreneurial background, but, and I, people tell me this isn't fair to myself, but I wouldn't really call myself an entrepreneur because I start funds. So they're not really operating companies. Right, kind of, they're derivative-ish companies, so it doesn't. I'm less of a serial entrepreneur. I'm more of a serial boutique fund manager, which is a different thing entirely.
Okay, fair enough. Whatever works. I've got such interesting answers from different people. I love it. Okay, so we're going to start wrap up, but you've done so many things. You are still doing a lot of things. What is your outlook for innovation in the age of AI? And I know we kind of talked about it. In the age of AI and in the age of community building that you're doing.
Oof, there's a question. So every Wednesday at 10 Central, gentle plug for you, I host a event called Geeks Tap. And it is 45 minutes of it is networking in small groups of 4, 5, or 6 using the Zoom breakout room feature. So you get a chance to meet 7, 8, 9 new tech folk from all over the world. You see how I kind of weave that in there? Super subtle, I know. Now, we also have a speaker who comes on and talks about what's going on. And this has been a very popular trend lately. We've had 3 or 4 speakers specifically address the AI community human element. So the most optimistic viewpoint is that if AI really takes off and, I don't know, AGI becomes a thing, but even if it doesn't, even where we are right now, I think every single white collar job is at risk right now.
Okay.
And if robotics comes on the way that I think it will, then every single blue collar job is at risk as well. Mm-hmm. So let's assume that we fast forward and that happens. To some way, shape, or form, people are going to be a lot less employed. So the most optimistic is that it's going to be a chance for us to address some of our mental health issues in focusing down on community living. right? You tighten up your community, your friend group, your family, like you do that, you live wherever you want to, where you're happiest and where you can actually embed into a community. And then the, you know, late stage capitalistic orphan crushing machine starts to have less of a sway on our life and our identity as human beings. Great. I hope that happens. The other alternative is a few small people who are driving this make a lot of money, and everybody else is really, really, really poor and destitute. I'm hoping for the former.
Okay. And I'm hoping you contribute to the former.
I hope that I contribute to the former, yes.
Okay. Well, so that was not a completely pessimistic end. But I want to thank you for your time. It was really, it's always been great talking to you. You have such a breadth of experience, but you're actually able to like bring it together. I love that.
Ex post rationalism, I think we call that. The reality is I just flit around from one thing to another because I have the attention span of a squirrel. And then later I try to, you know, explain it with some pattern or other.
But you do it, so that's good. There you go. But thank you, and we'll catch each other soon.